Hour number two of the VGK Insider Show rolling along here on a Thursday. And the VGK Insider Show is brought to you by the Dollar Loan Center, where your first loan is on us. Apply for free at don'tbebroke.com to get up to $5,000. And this is the part of the program where Darren would say, hey, Chris, what are we going to do?
Sticks down, drop the puck for hour number two.
Why are we doing?
Yes.
Why are we doing that an hour into the show?
I don't know. We should be doing it in the first hour. Well, we got to make sure we get the woo in. And you generally bring the show in. So for hour one,
true.
I don't know. I'm just spitballing here.
I'm just saying, like, you know, when we bring Mallard in, first thing he says could be sticks down, drop the puck. We're not starting on time. Like, if we're just getting our sticks down now, we've missed an entire period of hockey.
That's true. That is true. And if you get started on the second period, you're in big trouble.
Well, unless you're the Vancouver Canucks, they can turn any deficit really into a close game by the end of it. But anyway, let's go and dig into game one of the Eastern Conference Final, the New York Rangers, President Trophy winners, the Florida Panthers, the representative last season for the Eastern Conference in the Stanley Cup Final. Of course, they lost in five games to who? The Vegas Golden Knights. By the way, just so everyone's clear, and this was something that Dave Gosher brought up when we were out at Cote the Fortress, even though the Golden Knights are not in the playoffs anymore, even though the Golden Knights lost in the first round to the Stars, they are still the Stanley Cup champions. Until the trophy has been awarded to somebody else, the Golden Knights are still Stanley Cup champions. So, by all means, wear your gear. Be proud of that fact. Let everybody know that Vegas is still the champions. Just figured I'd let that let that little nugget out there. So anyway, the Rangers, the Panthers, game one, a 3-0 victory for the Florida Panthers on the road at Madison Square Garden over the New York Rangers. Did you learn anything from that game, Chapman?
Well, maybe it's a hot take. Maybe it's overreaction.
Okay.
But what I learned is the Rangers are not as good as we thought they were.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. I think I expected more from them. And, it's one game overtake or hot take overreaction time. But yeah, I think, and maybe I'll eat these words next week when the series is tied at two or whatever. But look, I think the Rangers are not the better team in this series. I think that's the way, and I've felt that way for, I've been on the Panthers since basically January that they were gonna go back to the Cup Final.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I think they're a lot better than the Rangers than maybe we thought they were.
Okay, so here's what's funny about you saying that. There were, I don't know if it was Tuesday or Monday, I don't remember when Mallard initially asked me the question, but he asked me, do you have an early favorite in the Eastern Conference Final? And admittedly, I hadn't thought too deeply about Florida and the Rangers, specifically because there was a game seven, right? You had Edmonton, you had Vancouver. Most of my attention, most of my focus was there. So I think I said at the time, it's kind of too hard to pick, right? And then the more you sit and think about it, the more you dig into the Rangers, the more you start to think about what the Panthers have been through, their path, all of it. I came around to the idea that this isn't as close a series as a lot of people think it's going to be. Now, like you, I might end up eating my words. Like you, I might be overreacting to one game. However, when the game goes about exactly as you expected it would going into it, it tends to catch your attention. So there were a couple of observations that I made in watching game number one last night. So I'm gonna give you my first one. I believe the homework assignment for you was to pick 3-2. So I'm gonna give you my first one. And even though you look at the numbers separating Igor Shesterkin from Sergei Bobrovsky, like we did the exercise yesterday and I had Igor Shesterkin as my leading Conn Smythe candidate for the New York Rangers and I did not have Sergei Bobrovsky as the leading Conn Smythe trophy candidate for the Florida Panthers, mainly because numbers are important to goaltenders, and Bobrovsky's numbers, on the whole, not as impressive as Shesterkin's. But here is where Sergei Bobrovsky separates himself from Igor Shesterkin. Big saves. Key moments. You need a save, you get it from Bob. You got it in the first round against the Tampa Bay Lightning. You got it at times in the second round against Carolina, but where you got it last night was at a crucial point of the game. The third period, it's a 1-0 lead, and a puck squirts out right to the slot. Mika Zibanejad leans into a one-timer, and it is as perfect a save as you can make given those circumstances. It's right off the pillow. He's square. There's such great economy of movement. Sergei Bobrovsky is the best big game, big moment, big save goaltender in the game right now. He is better than Igor Shesterkin last night. That's the observation. The first one that I have, Bob is a better goaltender when you need a save.
You know, and he had a couple of big saves. Like, he had one right before the end of the first period. I think it was the first period. Rangers were on the power play. And he came up with, like, a big save with, like, 3 seconds left in the period. Look, my observation is the Rangers, if they don't capitalize on their chances, and it kind of goes along with you know, you saying about Bobrovsky and how important he is, the Rangers had a couple of opportunities, like breakaway opportunities. There was one, I think it was Roslovic, came in all alone, and he was unable to score on Bobrovsky. There was another where it was a defenseman, I can't remember who it was, for the Rangers, came down and hit the post. Look, when you have those one-on, basically no, and it's not just exclusively to the Rangers, but it's emphasized more in a series of this magnitude. If you don't score on those chances, you're going to lose. Mm-hmm. And the Rangers did not do that last night. They did not score on those odd man rushes. They didn't score on their breakaway opportunities, and they didn't score at all. And that's an issue. And it's one that I would imagine Peter Laviolette was not happy about.
No. And by the way, this segment truly needs, after every observation, the Leon drop.
Great observation.
There it is.
Okay, so here's my second observation. The Florida Panthers forecheck ate the Rangers alive. Like, the Panthers are aggressive, no doubt. They are going to send players into the zone. They are going to try to take away time and space, create a lot of confusion below the circles, below the goal line, with the intended purpose of A, hitting you, and B, forcing a mistake that can allow them to start cycling pucks, work down low, low to high, east, west, get the puck on net. That right there is what the Florida Panthers are looking to do. And their forecheck consistently ate the Rangers alive because the Rangers just didn't have enough urgency. They weren't getting back to pucks fast enough. They weren't moving pucks assertively enough or fast enough, and it allowed the Florida Panthers to sit in the pocket, to disrupt things, and just grind out the Rangers. 5-on-5, Florida was leaps and bounds better than the Rangers. And to a great extent, that has been the case for every series the Rangers have been in. They were not the better team 5-on-5 against Carolina. They were not the better team 5-on-5 against Washington. That's going to come as a surprise to a lot of people. But a lot of the damage that the Rangers did in that series against the Capitals was done on the power play, not 5-on-5. So when you've been outplayed 5-on-5 for as long as the Rangers have, and a forecheck eats you alive like the Florida Panthers did last night, it's cause for concern. The Rangers simply have to get better at their breakouts. They have to get back to pucks quicker. They have to have more urgency. And if they don't, it's going to be a long series for Igor Shesterkin. It's going to be a long series for Adam Fox. And it's going to be an easy series for the Florida Panthers.
Great observation.
Well, I've got a very spicy take, but I'll save that for my third.
Okay.
This one, and I think it might be a little more obvious, Matthew Tkachuk is the best player on the ice. Like, I know the Rangers have some stars. Artemi Panarin is really good. Mm-hmm. Chris Kreider. I'm a big Mika Zibanejad fan. You mentioned Adam Fox. But, Ryan, Matthew Tkachuk is a guy who rises to the occasion. He is a guy who is as big time of a player as it gets. He's a guy who just he just seems to perform in the biggest moments. And this is a big stage. You're on Broadway, Madison Square Garden, Eastern Conference Final. Matthew Tkachuk had himself a game last night, and I think it's going to continue throughout the series. So while I don't think it's a hot take, because I think there's a lot of people who would probably agree with me, but Matthew Tkachuk's the best player on the ice in the series.
Great observation.
Okay. So this needs to be a regular segment.
With the Leon
segment. Leon's drop. Yeah, with the Leon drops, the great observation. I don't know. I'm having fun anyway. I like what you're saying there when it comes to Matthew Tkachuk, because that's why I made the argument for Matthew Tkachuk yesterday on the show as a Conn Smythe front runner for the Florida Panthers. I told you guys, I said this, and even though you went with Alexander Barkov, and I'm not mad at you for it, I know how much you like Barkov, that's fine. Big games, Matthew delivers. Bigger moments, Matthew delivers even more. 2-point night, goal and an assist. It was that type of performance that I was expecting to see from Tkachuk to open the series, and I don't think he's done. I think he's just getting started here in the conference final. Like, this is going to be a definer for Matthew Tkachuk, and I think by the end of this one, if it goes the way I expect it will, and Tkachuk plays as well as I expect him to, he's going to be the front runner for the Conn Smythe for the Florida Panthers. Okay, so this isn't a spicy take. It really isn't much of a take at all. It's just facts, and facts are fickle things. But here's the deal. Final observation for me. The Rangers are being propped up by their power play that's gone dry. And let me explain that. Let me take a moment here to kind of dig into it, because it seems counterintuitive, just generally speaking. How can you be propped up by a power play that has gone dry? Well, they're losing games now because they're not getting the power play to work the way that it did in the early going of the playoffs. If you take it on its face, the New York Rangers are 11th for 35 on the power play. Not bad. 11 for 35. That's a great percentage. That's 30%. You would love that. That's amazing. Then you start to think about it a little bit more objectively. 0 for 2 last night. Not great. How many power play goals, Chapman, of the 11 that they've scored in the postseason, how many power play goals do you think that they have scored in their last 5 games?
I'm going to guess 0.
1. Ugh. They have 1 power play goal in their last 5 games. Why am I choosing arbitrarily to break it 5 games ago? Well, that's when the New York Rangers suffered their first loss of the postseason. The first 7 games of the postseason, they won. Why? Because they scored 10 power play goals in 7 games.
In one series against a bad team that probably didn't deserve to even be in the playoffs.
So when you look at it that way, the fact that they have gone 1 for 12 on the power play over the last 5 games, that they're 2-3 in that stretch, and that it's happening against really good teams and not just the Washington Capitals, it gives you cause for concern if you're a Rangers fan. This team gets carved 5-on-5.
Yeah,
they just do.
There's a lot to be concerned about there.
They're just not that good 5-on-5. They have been propped up by an elite power play against the Washington Capitals and the first half of the series against the Carolina Hurricanes. The only reason why the Rangers were able to dispatch Carolina in six games is because they were great early on in that series on the power play. Carolina figured it out. They shut them down, and they didn't have much offense from that point forward. So the observation for me is very simple. If the New York Rangers cannot get their power play to start clicking and converting and being dangerous, this is not going to end well for the New York Rangers. They are overmatched 5-on-5. And if they don't have the saving grace of an elite power play, they're not getting by the Florida Panthers. It's not happening. This is not game one overreaction. This is not a situation where I'm going to sit here and feel embarrassed by what I said a week from now. It's not. If the Rangers power play gets working, if it gets going, then they've got a shot in this series. If it doesn't, it's not going to end well for them.
Great observation.
Thanks, all right. Leon.
All right. Here's the spicy take. The Florida Panthers blue line is better than the Rangers blue line from top to bottom. Aaron Ekblad, really good player. Gustav Forsling had an assist on the game-winning goal last night. Oliver Ekman-Larsson, we kind of laugh about the contract. He had a goal, it was taken back, but he's been playing well for them. Montour, I really like Brandon Montour. I liked him when he was with the Ducks. But I just think they don't have that one superstar like the Rangers do. The Rangers, you can make the case, they have two. But crucial mistake last night by Keandre Miller. I thought they would be able to overcome that. They didn't. I just think that the Rangers' blue line, Adam Fox and Trouba, after that, you've got some guys who could be good, but they need to step up. And I think the Panthers' blue line for this stage is better than the Rangers blue line.
Is that a spicy take?
I kind of feel like it is, because I think you there's so much love given to the Rangers blue line. And look, I think Keandre Miller's a really good player. Like, I like him, but I don't think I just couldn't see a player for Florida making the type of mistake that he made last night, where he peeled off and went to the bench. Yeah. Instead of continuing his defensive assignment, allowed Florida to get in and score that second goal. But, I mean,
There was a lot wrong on that second goal.
Yeah, yeah, and it's, you know, you don't just pinpoint him, but there's so much. Like, Shesterkin, yeah, I think, was out of position.
Shesterkin played the puck right into Carter Verhaeghe.
Yeah, so it would it go off the boards, right? And then that's when Miller went to the bench, and, yeah, it was a disaster. I like their blue line. I think it's very underrated. And I feel like because maybe they don't have that one superstar player, we don't really – I mean, Ekblad is a really good player. But I don't know if I'd label him a superstar. And I think because they don't have that one guy who we would look at as an elite, you know, Norris candidate, they kind of get overlooked. They're a really good blue line. Like I love Brandon Montour. Like I just think he's a really good player, and he's a guy who he was kind of forgotten because of where he was, and he kind of gets lost in the shuffle because Florida, not the biggest media market. But they're really good, Ryan. And I think
I think they
deserve a lot more credit than what they get.
I'm with you there. Hit Leon for you one more time.
Great observation.
Okay, I know that I said I had three observations. I'm going to give a bonus one right now. The Florida Panthers are a team that has the firmest grasp on what their identity is.
Like, I think that's fair.
Full stop. They know exactly who they are. They know exactly what they want to accomplish. And everything that they do is moving in that direction. Whether they're down in a game and chasing, whether they're up in a game by one or by three or by four, their game doesn't change. They are the same in the first period as they are in the second period, as they are in the third period. They are consistently pushing in the right direction night in and night out for 60 straight minutes. They have the firmest grasp on who they are and what they want to do of any team left in the postseason. And that includes Dallas. I still think Dallas is a deeper team than Florida is, but as far as understanding their identity, implementing their game plan, and sticking to it no matter what, there isn't a team better than the Florida Panthers at doing that in the postseason left. The Edmonton Oilers aren't there. The New York Rangers aren't there. And to be frank, I don't actually know what the Rangers' identity is. That's another bonus observation from last night's game. But it's very simple. The Florida Panthers are the team that best understands what their identity is, how they have to play to win, and nothing fazes them.
Great observation.
You know, there's something that, and maybe my timeline is off here a little bit, but correct me if I'm wrong. Paul Maurice used to coach the Carolina Hurricanes. He was fired, yep. And Peter Laviolette took over. They won the Stanley Cup. When Laviolette was fired, Paul Maurice was rehired to coach Carolina Hurricanes. Is my timeline right on that?
Let me take a look at that.
Because I feel like there's a little coaching. Yeah. Story and within this series that kind of gets lost, and it's that both of these guys, first of all, they've been around a long time, and I know Laviolette's got the one cup, Maurice doesn't have any, but I feel like Paul Maurice, I'm not going to say he's a better coach than Peter Laviolette, because clearly Peter Laviolette is a really good coach, but I feel like Paul Maurice does a better job of pushing the buttons of his team than Laviolette does of pushing the buttons of the Rangers. Like, I feel like Paul Maurice kind of knows how to jab these guys, like poke them with a stick and kind of make them ornery and angry and get them going. I don't know if, first of all, I mean, Trouba clearly has that in him, but I don't know if Laviolette has that in him to kind of punch his guys in the face and get them angry and, you know, ready to go out there and tear someone apart. But like, Maurice, I think I like the way that he talks to the media, how he's able to get his point across to his players through the media. And like I said, I'm not going to say he's a better coach than Laviolette. Like I said, I think they're both really good coaches. But in that regard, being able to push the right buttons, and maybe if Maurice was coaching a different team, it would be a different, completely different type of matchup. But because of that identity that you talked about with the Panthers, Maurice is a big part of that identity. And I think for that, I like Florida a little bit more in that regard, because Maurice is just able to kind of stir the pot a little bit and make his guys angry. And he does a really good job of telling us what's going through his mind, and the players hear it. And I just like coaches like him who are they don't hold back. Like there's no tiptoeing around the subject. Like he will come right out and tell you how he feels, and the players respond to that. And I think that's the signs of a guy who's a really good coach. But I think I like that for Florida a little bit more than I like that angle for the Rangers.
Well, I mean, Peter Laviolette might put Matt Rempe in. That might be the big adjustment.
I don't think that's a winning adjustment.
No, I don't think it is either. But you know, if you can take a player along the way, maybe that's what you do. I don't know. I think Paul Maurice is a better coach than Peter Laviolette. I just do. I think that there's tactics for Maurice. There's, as you mentioned, the ability to kind of get his message across individually to players, collectively to players, through the media to players. But then there's the ability to take the heat off his players too, right? And we've seen and heard Paul Maurice do that in a lot of different ways throughout the series against Boston. Paul made himself more of the story against the Bruins than his team was or had to be in that series. And I think it went a long way to them finishing off the Boston Bruins in six games. So all that to say, I think Paul Maurice has been pretty masterful this postseason run, and the more he can talk, the more he can divulge, the more we can get sort of those Paul Maurice-isms, the better off I think it is for hockey. Like, you want a coach that's going to be able to have a little bit of fun with what the aspect is of the season that they're dealing with. And, you know, like, I'm just going to come out and say it. The Stanley Cup final will be more fun if Paul Maurice is there instead of Peter Laviolette. That's all I got, right? Like, you're going to get sound bites. You're going to get memorable quotes. You're going to get funny moments. You're going to get profanity when you're not supposed to or not looking for it. Like, that's what you're going to get with Paul Maurice. Like, there's star power on the ice, but there's star power behind the bench, and Paul Maurice is certainly that guy.
Yeah, and I like the personality. I think that's kind of what I was alluding to. I just couldn't quite get the words out. But, yeah, personality-wise, I think Paul Maurice just brings a little bit more intrigue and interest to whatever he's coaching. Like, I think Paul Maurice is a guy who can make, like, coaching chess interesting because I'm sure he'd have some incredible sound bites for, you know, a guy making the wrong move or, like, I don't know chess moves.
Well, okay,
but
let's just kind of call it what it is. They just had a series against the Boston Bruins. Jim Montgomery, to his credit, right? He had a Boston Bruins team set the single season record for best regular season ever. Do you remember a memorable thing that Jim Montgomery said that entire season?
No.
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 But you introduce Paul Maurice. You introduce Paul Maurice to the series, and you had Jim Montgomery, like, trying to recreate flops on the bench. You had Jim Montgomery complaining about the fact that there was too much time spent on the road. You had Montgomery complaining about Sam Bennett. Like, there were so many memorable Jim Montgomery moments in that series, and that's the Paul Maurice effect.
Yeah.
No, pulls it out of you.
Yeah. I mean, he's – you're right. Montgomery, like, good coach. I don't know if he's got quite the soundbite in him.
He tried.
Yeah, well, he didn't do so great, much like his
team. Just saying, there were more moments for Jim Montgomery that were front and center beyond just a great hockey coach, and that was because of Paul Maurice.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's take a break. Come back with one-timers next on the VGK Insider Show.
A quick look at news and notes from around the National Hockey League, brought to you by Paul Padilaw. It's not about the injury, it's about the recovery.
One-timers, news and notes from around the National Hockey League, brought to you by Paul Padilaw. It's not about the injury, it's about the recovery. No Roope hints for the Dallas Stars. No Adam Henrique for the Edmonton Oilers in Game 1 of the Western Conference Final, which is set to begin in just about 7 to 10 minutes or so. Roope seems to be close. Maybe game two is what Pete DeBoer said. Who's in a tougher spot with the players out in game one? Is it Dallas without Roope hints, or is it Edmonton without Adam Henrique?
Well, I think it's a weird answer. Because clearly Roope Hintz is more important to the Dallas Stars than I think Adam Henrique is to the Edmonton Oilers. But I think Dallas has the depth to absorb the loss for one game, whereas Henrique, he's obviously not a kid anymore. But we kind of talked about in the first segment, the depth for the Oilers just isn't there. And you take Henrique out of the lineup, and it's kind of a big loss for their depth, which they don't have a lot of to begin with. So I think Dallas is better equipped to handle the loss of Roope Hintz. Plus, they won Game 6 without him. So I think they'll be fine in that regard. I think they're just, like I said, they've got the depth to be able to overcome that loss. Now, over the course of a series, if it turns into something like that, which it doesn't sound like it will, it's a huge loss for Dallas. But given that he'll be back, probably like you said, game two, I think Dallas will be able to handle it okay.
Yeah, I think it's more Adam Henrique than Roope Hintz, and for a lot of the reasons that you laid out there, the Dallas Stars are a deeper team. without Adam Henrique in the lineup for Edmonton. Yes, they were able to win a game to move on without him, but you're going up against a completely different scenario here against the Dallas Stars. Patrick Alvin, Vancouver Canucks GM, Dallas Stars Jim Neal, and the Florida Panthers Bill Zito were named the three finalists of the Jim Gregory GM of the Year Award. Do you have a front runner for that? Obviously, you've got two teams in the final four in Jim Neal and Bill Zito. Where do you fall on that one?
You said Patrick Alvin was the other?
Yeah.
Okay. Jim Neal won it last year. Bill Zito won it 2 years before that. So I think it's going to be one of those two guys. I think Jim Neal's going to win it again. Like, I think he's going to go back to back.
Sure.
Chris Tanev
deal was a big one.
Yeah,
for
but
for sure.
You factor in the Logan Stankoven, right? I mean, he's a rookie. The acquisition of Matt Duchene, I think that's a huge one. So Jim Neal, I think, is maybe the best general manager in the NHL. He's drafted a phenomenal team. He's made the right moves as far as signings. He's brought in the right coaches. I have no issue if he wins it again.
So Patrick Alvin is interesting, right? Because you look at what the expectations were for Vancouver going into this season.
Right.
And I don't think anyone expected that they were going to be a division winner, let alone get to the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs and push that round to seven games, all without Thatcher Demko and without Brock Besser. But they were able to kind of move on from Bo Horvat a couple of years ago. It allowed them to bring in JT Miller. It allowed them to kind of find the right spot for certain players. You got Elias Pettersson, who was drafted and developed. Quinn Hughes, drafted and developed. Yes, they're special players, but you still have to draft them and develop them. And then Elias Lindholm, listen, I know he wasn't the game breaker that a lot of people were hoping he would be, but he wasn't that in Calgary in the early goings of this season either. And he did score some big goals for them in the postseason. And then Nikita Zadorov was an absolute gem. He was fantastic for Vancouver and a big reason why they were able to get to the second round. So when you look at all of the things Alvin did over the course of the season, I think he absolutely deserves to be there. But when you look at the team on the whole, getting Chris Tanev might be the Stanley Cup piece that the Dallas Stars have been missing the last couple of years. He's been that good. He has been that good of an acquisition for Dallas. And I have a hard time going against Jim Neal in this situation.
Yeah,
I really do.
Quick correction. Bill Zito finished second in 2021. He did not win. I thought he won for some reason, but he finished. I thought that was the year that the Panthers won the President's Trophy. He took second that year.
And then you look at the Panthers, you look at Bill Zito, like, go out and get a Vladimir Tarasenko at the trade deadline. You bring in Kyle Okposo for a little bit of depth, and then you go out and you bring in Oliver Ekman-Larsson, who's turned into a stud for you, kind of outside of the contract issues and all that. Like, everything Bill Zito's done has led the Panthers to this spot. You got three guys that are absolutely deserving of this.
And maybe because Zito hasn't won it, maybe he'll end up winning it. But did you happen to catch the quote from Oliver Ekman-Larsson in regards to the World Championships? Because I guess he was asked, you know, his thoughts on Sweden playing in the World, how they're playing. And his comment was, honestly, I haven't watched 1 minute of it because the last 9 years of my career I've been watching or participating in the World Championships, indicating every single team he's played for has not been in the playoffs the last 9 years. So I thought that was pretty funny from Oliver Ekman-Larsson, and I mean, he's right. I mean, he's played on some really bad teams that have not been in the playoffs. So I think maybe once or twice with the Coyotes and none with the Canucks. But yeah, I'm with you. Bill Zito, you know what? He's done a lot of good stuff too. So I think it's wide open. I think Jim Neal will win it, but I think all three of those guys have legitimate cases.
You can talk me into all three.
Yeah,
and I think that they're all,
because I think
all
you make a good case for Patrick Alvin.
Yeah, 100%. Gabe Landeskog, This was pretty wild.
LTIR?
No. Gabe Landeskog and Chris McFarland, they held a joint media conference today. And I think a lot of people were expecting that it was going to be an announcement of retirement. It's not the case. Gabe Landeskog not retiring, just so everybody's clear. But there's no timeline for him to return to play, if that makes sense. Now, Landeskog has been dealing with a knee injury. He's had some surgeries, I think two surgeries specifically on the knee since winning the Stanley Cup. Like, Gabe Landeskog has not played a game in the National Hockey League for the Colorado Avalanche since lifting the Stanley Cup two seasons ago. Hasn't played a game.
Oof.
Not one time. So it's been a long road. There's been a lot of rehab. There's been a lot of like false starts and setbacks and all of that that Gabe was kind of explaining to some of the reporters today, because we all saw the videos. We all saw the images of Landeskog working through on his own time whether or not he'd be able to return to play for Colorado in this playoff run. Didn't happen. He wasn't really sure how close he was physically. Mentally, he felt like he could get right in there. But there are boxes he needs to check and certain things he's got to do in order to get himself to that level. He says that he intends to play again. He wants to play again, mainly because of the team, the Avalanche. He loves being a Colorado Avalanche, but he also mentioned that the last time that his kids saw him play, they were 1.5 and 2.5 years old.
So his kids basically
will have no
recollection of him playing.
Right. And they're unsure of like why he's not playing. Like, he told the story that, you know, he'll tell the kids like, "Oh, I'm going to work." And they're like, "Yeah, but you're not playing the game."
Yeah.
So Gabe Landeskog is playing for more than just himself. He's playing for a lot of things, or at least attempting to return to play for a lot of different things. I wish him the best. I hope he's able to get back there. And said there's no timetables just in terms of hitting benchmarks or anything like that, because if it doesn't happen, then you get frustrated. You get kind of sucked into that feedback loop that's not good for anybody. But he does hope that he can play in 2024-25.
Yeah, let's hope. I mean, it's better for the league when you have a guy like him on the ice. Obviously, it's better for the Colorado Avalanche. You know, I always root for guys, especially a guy who hasn't played in 2 years. Like, you want to see him get back out there. I'm a big believer and fan of guys being able to go out on their own terms. I hate watching guys lose their career or have to retire due to injury. And hopefully we get to see some more Gabe Landeskog in the NHL before he decides to step away for good.
I mean, he's only 31 years old. So, you know, there's runway still left
for
Landeskog.
God, I wish I could have retired at 31.
What would you have done?
I would have bought a house on the beach somewhere and brought my Switch, and I'd have been good. Although I guess the Switch wasn't around when I was 31, but you get my drift.
No, but I mean, you'd have enough money to pay for one.
Yeah. Oh, I'd have one now.
Well, there you go. What beach? You're a big San Diego guy. I know that.
Yeah, but a little too pricey for my liking. I'd probably find a beach somewhere in Southeast Asia, Thailand or Vietnam or Indonesia, maybe in the Philippines.
World traveler.
Yeah,
those are your one-timers.
Someplace with good food and cold beer.
The only two prerequisites you need, right?
Yes. Sandy beach, cold beer, and good food.
Those are your one-timers for today, Thursday, May 23rd. Catching up with Chapman is next.
That was one. When the guy wouldn't stop talking, we had no choice but to give him his own segment. It's time for Catching Up with Chapman.
All right, Ryan. So we talked about it a little bit in the first segment that I turned 45 yesterday. It was my birthday. My birthday will go on through the end of Memorial Day weekend because I will enjoy my 3-day weekend. We're going to do a nice family dinner tomorrow. I haven't decided where. I'm feeling Thai. I think we're going to go for some Thai food, maybe. We're a Thai, which has slowly become my favorite Thai restaurant in town. Every year I struggle with something when it's my birthday, and I don't know what the proper protocol is. So I get probably 120, 150 messages from friends on Facebook wishing me a happy birthday.
You're a popular guy.
Well, and the cool thing is, because I lived overseas, the birthday wishes start coming in generally the day before because of the international dateline and all that. But what I struggle with is thanking everybody for wishing me a happy birthday. Like, is the protocol I have to physically answer every single person that mm-hmm. wished me a happy birthday on my Facebook? Or can I just create like this generic, hey, everybody, thank you for wishing me a happy birthday, which is what I did. But I feel like maybe I'm kind of inclined to go back and say thank you. But what I struggle with is I don't think anyone remembers if I thank them for wishing me a happy birthday. So they're probably going to do it again next year anyway. But
yeah,
I don't know the proper protocol. And I know you're not a big Facebook guy, but you do you do the social media stuff. So what's the protocol?
I've got a take for you. Okay. You say it's 120 to 150 people.
Yes.
Right? Give or take?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, about that.
How many of those people have your phone number?
Ooh. Probably a lot less than
all
100.
Of them?
No, definitely not.
Less than 100?
Probably okay. Less than 100, yeah.
Here's my philosophy. If somebody wanted an individual response,
they
and they've got your phone number, they could text you or they could call you.
Right.
If for everything that's on social media, so if it's like Instagram, even on X, whatever the case may be, on Facebook is more what you're talking about here. If you reach out and you wish me a happy birthday on Facebook, you are lumped into the category of people that I thank for sending me all the birthday wishes. That's the way that you do it. If someone wants something a little bit more than just the generic thanks to everybody that reached out, they reach out individually. That's my general sense.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Like my best friend in DC, she sent me a text mm-hmm. message last night. So of course I responded and you know, some good friends here and some people I grew up with and obviously family. You know, I got personal text messages from them. So of course I reply to them, but yeah. I think that's a good philosophy to take because I battle with it every year where do I have to thank these people individually or – but I like that. I think your answer is on point.
Yeah, you don't have to thank them individually. You can thank them collectively, and then the people that reach out to you in a more personal manner are the ones that you thank individually. That's just how I've always kind of gone about things. But then again, I've got a lot of my stuff, not the forward-facing stuff, obviously, but a lot of my stuff is private, and
right.
I don't get people wishing me happy birthday. Like yeah. I don't know why I've lucked out that way, but it's been a blessing.
I don't even know when your birthday is.
Flag Day, buddy.
Oh, really? You're Gemini as well?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah.
One of my very good friends that I grew up with, in fact, the first girl I had a crush on, her birthday is also Flag Day. Yeah. Shout out to Kristen Donnelly.
It's wow. Hey, Kristen Donnelly, how you doing? We're back with you tomorrow on the VGK Insider Show.